We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome in to the PHNX Suns podcast.
She's back! She's alive!
Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and leave us a 5-star review.
First comment.
What's up, guys?
Yes. See, Titan knows.
How are you more importantly?
I'm alive. So that's a positive.
Yes.
Back to the dead. We'll see if I can remember how to do this. Also, what I miss?
We're into the Western Conference Finals, Lindsay.
Yeah, let's freaking go.
I mean, not the Suns, but the NBA is.
I feel like, honestly, I think my body was like, listen, you're about to have a really hard week at work, so we're gonna take you out of that. Sure, this may be hard and difficult as well, but it'll be less painful than having to work.
Basically, Lindsay was ready to come back on Thursday, and I told her, I was like, listen, just pull a Suns and don't show up, okay? It's okay. We don't need you today.
I mean, they didn't, so why should I?
Yeah,
you know?
I mean,
there you go. To be just fair, following suit. You were healthier, I think, than the Suns were and everybody's mindset was that time. So
that's facts. But I'm happy to be back. Happy to be with you guys. And today we're going to talk a little bit of Mikal Bridges. Things are going to get a little spicy, but let's start on a positive note. Okay, we'll start this show on a positive. Mikal Bridges was named to the NBA All-Defensive First Team. So congratulations,
well
Flowers,
deserved.
To
well
you,
deserved.
Mikal, for that one.
Well deserved.
You're killing me right now.
I'm genuine when I say that. I promise you I am. Okay. I do think it was deserved.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
So anticlimactic. The dude finished second for the Defensive Player of the Year. Mm. We knew he was going to be on First Team. If he hadn't, there would have been something majorly wrong.
Yeah, there's like no rhyme or reason to what order they have been releasing these awards.
None.
They're just like, oh, random Wednesday? Sure. Here's the coach of the year. Yeah. Like, what? I don't know.
Yo, I didn't realize this because I didn't even think about it. But I found out yesterday I won $250 from DraftKings for putting a free bet on Monty to win coach of the year.
Yay.
Very nice.
So
well done.
Thank
nice.
You, DraftKings and Monty Williams.
My campaign most improved player did not work out real well.
None of mine. Or,
no, six man of the year. That was not good.
I think I had DA most improved player. I think.
I think I had DA for Defensive Player of the Year because it was like
the odds were really good on that.
Yeah, it was like +4,000 at the time.
Yeah.
And then I think I had Brooklyn and the Suns in the final.
Did you?
About that. Okay. So anyway, back to Mikal Bridges.
Yeah.
Definitely deserved. So congratulations to him. But we'll move on to the spicier stuff now. Let's talk about his performance over the 2021-2022 season, some strengths and weaknesses of his. Who wants to start?
Apparently I do.
Let's go.
should I, so you two can yell at each other?
No, I want to hear what Gerald has to say.
You don't, but go ahead.
I do. Look, Mikal Bridges improved across the board, I think, this year. There were a lot of things that came about in the playoffs that I'm sure Saul will bring up and that we'll talk about as far as areas for growth for him, because there are areas where he does need to grow. It became very obvious in the playoffs that his ability to go out and get a bucket, as Monty Williams put it, was not there, and they needed it at that time. But he did improve across the board. He was, you know, career high 14.2 points per game, not anything that's going to break the bank or anything like that, and he was efficient, shot 37% from three, 53% overall. Those are good numbers. You like those numbers if that is a guy who's your third or fourth option, whatever you want to call him. He was better in the mid-range. He was more aggressive off the dribble. this season, especially in the second half of the season. And he was the defensive player of the year runner up, which he was really good on that end of the floor. He took the toughest assignments. He logged a shit ton of minutes all season long. Like, he is a very good two-way player, and he's only, was he 25 years old? He turns 26 in August. So still a young player, still approaching his prime, not quite there yet. But there are a lot of areas where he can grow.
Most memeable pictures of the year from Mikal Bridges as well. Very look, he came through in everything you expected defensively. Mm-hmm. He excelled there. Offensively, a little hit or miss. You know, we saw really high highs and low lows when it comes to Bridges, which is kind of what we've come to expect. I don't have a major problem with what we saw from him. I don't count anything when it comes to the playoffs with this team individually, because everybody kind of crapped the bed in this playoffs, and it's tough to separate team defense from the individual and those kind of things. But I would like to see more consistency offensively if we believe continuity and continual internal growth is the key for this team. It starts with Mikhail's offense. So overall, I'm happy, but I need to see more going into the future on the offensive end. There's your level-headed response. Saul, please take away the remainder of the response.
Yeah, well, mine's going to be level-headed too. listen, Mikal Bridges is a very good player. Mm-hmm. And so when I want to say that up front, and I do believe he is one of the guys that is the heart and soul of this squad. He keeps it kind of loosey-goosey. He doesn't take himself too seriously. He gets hyped up when he needs to. He knows how to balance his own emotions, okay? And I think it definitely helps this team, especially get through some of the, you know, the kind of muddy parts of the season. That being said, you know, we have to remember that Mikal Bridges is a top 10 pick, okay? You know, and DA gets a lot of flack for being the number one pick and being inconsistent. I think Mikal Bridges, to the same degree, I mean, not to the same degree, but to a similar degree, deserves flack as well. Like, his inconsistency offensively, in my opinion, is what cost them a championship last year and what contributed to their demise this year. In back-to-back seasons, in the final series of the season, he has had 3 out of 4 games where he scored in single digits in back-to-back years. So that, to me, that doesn't really show the improvement from one year to the next. When the team needed another guy to score, they couldn't count on him to be that guy. Mm-hmm. So that hurt them this year. And then, you know, the defensive player of the year and defensive accolades, while much deserved, one of the things that I don't think Mikal Bridges did effectively enough in both of the final series for the last 2 years is being an aggravator of sorts. Somebody that's just a pest, somebody that's just constantly, like, you're sick and tired of what, like, not like Pat Bev, but like Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart is a pest. He's kind of an aggravator. And I think Mikal has a tendency to play good, solid defense, but also not get grimy and dirty the way you'd like to see your defensive players in the playoffs when they kind of need to be that way. So that's kind of my overall take on Mikal Bridges, is that he just needs to be overall better. And this is, like, you know, you were saying that he's going to be 26 this year. He's been in the league 4 years now. He's had an opportunity to grow and develop and at his own pace, really, the first 2 years especially. And the last 2 years, he's had Chris Paul in the system. He's had guys kind of step up. D.A. in the playoffs last year was much better than D.A. in the playoffs this year. And Mikal looked like he might be on pace to grow offensively and really contribute at a high level, but he just can never get over that hump. And once we got to the playoffs, you saw it. It was the epitome. 31 points in one game and then single digits the next. And you just never knew what you were going to be able to rely on with Mikal Bridges. So that's my overall assessment of him, which I think is not unreasonable.
You bring up the DA hate, though, and that Mikal deserves more question, or no, not more than DA, but more
like relatively.
To him. But he's accomplished more than DA has in this league. He's proven himself completely on one
in the regular season.
Okay, but that's where primary hate for DA has come sure, is in but, the regular
but,
season.
But, so. But what, when does it really matter? Is in the postseason. And DA had a phenomenal postseason last year. Still got as much hate this year because of his inconsistency during the regular season. Mikal Bridges was okay last year in the postseason. Not as good as DA because DA was the anchor of the defense. Mm-hmm. And then he was kind of mid in offensively. Didn't really grow in that in regards to that. Slightly he did, but not to the point where you expect, you know, a big jump at least. You know, I would think if you were averaging 14 points a game last year, I think a reasonable expectation is that you average 17 to 18 points the next. That's just my two cents.
Part of me just also thinks, though, he's a victim of the system like DA is, though, too. It's not a system designed for him to score a lot. It's a system that's designed for Chris Paul and Devin Booker to dictate the scoring and who and when. So, I mean, is that assessment wrong? I feel like he's kind of jammed into the same thing DA is. You get your opportunities when you get your opportunities, and that's that kind of thing.
I think so. Like, you tailor your system around your two best players, and that's what the Suns did, and that's what they've done the last 2 years. And I think Mikal Bridges is caught in that area of being a guy who can do a little bit more on the perimeter, but also trying to figure out where his spots come in, when he should attack. And I think with Mikal, the biggest thing for me is that he needs to improve as a guy who attacks the rim a lot more. You look at his advanced numbers, he is great at finishing around the basket. He doesn't get there as often as you would like. Like, Lindsay and I were talking about Kelly Oubre, guys in the past that, you know, because people have talked about, well, what if we brought Kelly Oubre back? Like, no, don't bring Kelly Oubre back. But he is a guy that slashes. He drives to the rim. He's aggressive. He attacks. The Suns don't have a lot of guys like that right now that can do it off the bounce. And Mikal Bridges, while he's gotten really good at attacking off the bounce and pulling up for that mid-range jumper, he's a guy that needs to get to the basket a little bit more, put his length and kind of his craftiness when he gets into the lane to use more, because he is a very good finisher. And I feel like that's something that we need to see improve from him, especially because this team doesn't have guys that get to the foul line a lot. Like, Mikal Bridges, 1.9 free throw attempts per game this season. That was up from last year's 1.8 per game. Like, those are numbers that need to get better. This team needs to make it a little bit easier on themselves, because they are such a mid-range heavy team. They need to make it easier on themselves by taking more threes, which we saw in the Dallas series. They were getting outshot by like 15 to 20 attempts from three-point range. And they need to be able to get to the foul line and attack the basket off the dribble. That's, for me, the biggest area of improvement for Mikal Bridges, because his defense is always going to kind of be more of a finesse defender, like you were talking about, as far as an agitator. Like, that would be great, but he needs to get, like, stronger to do that. And the way that his game, you know, he's a lanky dude. Like, he's always going to be the guy that's kind of, you know, tipping passes or shots or whatever from behind. Like, that's the stuff that he's best at.
I had a reasonable expectation last year because obviously Giannis is Giannis, and Mikal would never be able to match up against Giannis.
No.
I don't care what scenario you put out. But I was disappointed this year when I felt like Luka was a better matchup for Mikal. And then to watch him get kind of abused from the few times he was matched up one on one with Luka, I just was like, damn, you know, like, where do we go from here with Mikal if, you know, because I'm going to assume that it'll be, you know, the Mavs here in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years that he's going to have to match up with mostly. How's that going to happen? How's that going to manifest itself down the road? Where can he improve? It's strength. It's basically strength.
Right. And I think that's like, that kind of goes to their strategy as well, because in that series, you did feel good going in. Like, we have the defensive player of the year runner-up, a guy who's held Luka relatively in check the last few years. But they were soft switching so much, and they were allowing the Mavs to switch Chris Paul onto Luka, switch DA onto Luka. And I think that hurt, because it made the times when Mikal was actually matched up onto Luka stand out that much more. I think you can make a case that based on the last series, what Chris Paul and Mikal Bridges and DA had to do against the Pelicans without Book really expended a lot of their energy. And I think that came back to hurt them in a 7-game series against the Mavs. But like, I would have loved to see him on Luka more. Like, we saw there was the one game where they didn't switch him off as easily, and Mikal stuck with Luka basically the whole time. And that was probably their best win of the series. So I don't know. I see what you're saying, and like, yes, in the playoffs, you want to see more offensive consistency, especially because he had a stretch from February to like beginning of April. It was like a 30-game stretch where he only scored in single digits once in that stretch. And it felt like he was putting it together. Yep. It felt like he was taking ownership of that role and that he could be that third guy that, you know, we saw in games one and two of the finals last year when he was going toe-to-toe with Chris Middleton, and then it just totally disappeared the last couple of games. But again, I do think he's not asked to do as much on that end because of how much they ride him defensively, and that's something they'll have to come to terms with.
But then wouldn't you say, okay, maybe we take a step back on that side of things and the amount of minutes that he plays as well? Mm-hmm. Because that's got to be exhausting. The defensive assignment is exhausting. The amount of minutes he plays is exhausting. Mm-hmm. But have him as a true third option who can put up consistent numbers every night. The points are what's going to win you the game, right? Like right. Maybe you take a little less from one side to give to the other when it comes to Mikal specifically.
But, you know, it's funny because we're kind of hitting a theme here and unknowingly, which we should probably talk about later on this week is, you know, I keep hearing it's the system. You know, this is what the guys are asked to do, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, Monty. Well, I feel like there's a large part of this that we keep kind of, you know, it's not like we've intended to come back to this one spot, but we end up coming back to this one spot repeatedly. And, you know, is it on the player to adjust to the system and get the most out of it? Or is it the coach to try and get the most out of the system by tweaking it to the skill sets of his players?
But the system was fine. Like, they got away from the system in the playoffs, which is why their offense went to shit. Like, they didn't run a lot of their sets in the playoffs. And that's a separate conversation. Like, the system, they were a top five offense all year long. They were a top five offense last year, too. Like, the system works, but you need to be able to have other options available to you when you either get away from the system, when playoff defenses take you out of the system. Like, Monty brought it up in his exit interviews. He was saying, like, the one thing I've noticed watching these other playoff series is they have three or four guys that you know throw the ball around the perimeter and they can go get a bucket at any point in time. And you need to have that ability to improvise and to have guys that can get their own, create their own offense in that setting, in a playoff setting. And right now, all they had was Devin Booker and Chris Paul that could do that. Booker's getting double teamed. Chris Paul was not himself. And so your other options dry up really quick if you're not running any of your offense and if you're turning the ball over as much as they were. So that's something where he said, we felt like we gave, you know, Mikal and Cam Johnson opportunities to kind of expand their offense a little bit this season, but apparently we didn't do it enough. So I think that'll be a point of emphasis moving forward.
Not only that, but I also, you know, it's on Monty to tell those guys that they have to do that. And I don't know if that's happened or not. Obviously, we're not. You see practice a lot more than we do, but that's where I get a little unnerved is, okay, so what the fuck is the difference next year? Mm-hmm. You still have the same 37-year-old point guard, right. and if you're going to defer to him and his judgment every single game, we're going to be right back in the same spot, if not worse, next year. Because, listen, Chris Paul, hey, 35-year-old or 36 Chris Paul ain't coming through that door. Like, that time's come and gone. He might be good at the beginning of the season because he's, you know, rested and, you know, ready to go. But I firmly believe we've seen the best of Chris Paul in a Suns uniform. I don't know how big that drop off is, but I do feel like that's it.
What's going to be different is they have to go get a third scorer.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say it. Mikal isn't that guy. I don't think you should be expecting that from the guy you're expecting to carry the defensive load as well. DeAndre Ayton had the opportunity to be that guy and did not and wasn't that guy. So I think what they have to do this offseason is find that true second or third scorer. I mean, maybe Chris moves down in the pecking order where he's the third guy and you're getting a number two option.
I don't think it should be a maybe. I think he should be.
Well, but it depends on what you're doing. Like, it depends on who James Jones goes out and gets. But that's where you have to go. That's right. What this tells me. They expected too much out of Mikal and to a certain extent, Cam Johnson, and you didn't get that. And it exploited a very big weakness that this team has where, yes, you're a system offense, and when that works, great. But like you said, if a team shuts that down – over a 7-game series, where are you turning to? You can't just turn to Devin Booker because, A, it's not fair to only have a one guy offensive system, but B, Devin Booker proved, you know, when the defense is double teaming him and he has to be the primary ball handler, he can't be the guy to get a bucket every time. So now you have to figure out who are you plugging in, because I love Mikhail. I love Mikhail's game. I just think it becomes a little asinine to expect him to be that defensive stalwart that stops everybody and become your third option on offense, because I don't think that's the best way to use him. Utilize him as an anchor of the defense. Get your 14 a game out of him. Find another guy that can be that offense.
I don't disagree with that, but I would also, my counteraction to that point in the playoffs, only the playoffs, I could give a fuck about the regular season, to be honest with you guys. Like, cool, they get 50 or 60 or 70 wins. I could give a shit. I want to see what happens in the playoffs, and that's all I'm talking about with this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Regular season Mikhail Bridges is a completely different conversation for me. I'm talking just about the playoffs, and in the playoffs, like, you have to be a difference maker, whether it be just on offense or just on defense or a little bit of both. You have to be a difference maker. And my argument here is that for the last two seasons, 3 out of 4 games, he was not.
Yeah. And I do want to address, because I'm seeing in the comments, and it's we keep seeing this, the whole we got to move on from Chris Paul thing. You can't move on from Chris Paul.
Have you seen his contract?
You're not moving on from Chris Paul. The goal is to shift the burden from him being, you know, 1B to him being 3 or 2B or whatever, however you want to number that. Like, you need a guy.
1A, 1B, 1C, and then 2B, 2A.
Moving down to 2F, whatever you want to call it. The point is, like, you need to be able to differentiate your offense and not rely on him. Because and it sucks that we're even at this point that we have to have this conversation, because what Chris Paul is doing at age 36 this past year should be, like, an accomplishment. It should be something that we're celebrating, because not a lot of guys are anywhere near as effective as Chris Paul is at 36. Like, the only guy that's been more effective in the last 10 to 20 years at this age is LeBron James, who is LeBron James. And instead of talking about it like that, we're talking about, oh, we got to dump him, or oh, we got to get rid of him. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Chris Paul, and that shouldn't be lost on anybody. And if you find a way to dial back his minutes, dial back the load that he's bearing during the regular season, and gear it towards the playoffs, because I think this should be an eye opener for the Suns. The regular season doesn't matter. They were the best team in the motherfucking world, as JaVale McGee put it, all season long, and they got punched in the mouth in not one but two playoff series. So that doesn't matter. You need to have your best saved for the right time of year, and you need to have the energy to do that, and you need to be healthy to do that. So they have to be more responsible with Chris Paul's, the weight that he's bearing.
We talked about that at the beginning of this season, though. Mm-hmm. Constantly, mm-hmm. Chris Paul needs to sit more. Chris Paul doesn't need to play this many minutes, because it's all going to come crashing down in the playoffs if he gets hurt again. Mm-hmm. And the question that we asked ourselves was, is he willing to do that? Is Chris Paul going to do that?
But we
do you think that now that he's 37 and that he's seen it happen now multiple times in a row, he's going to actually do it?
I don't think so, because he had a month off. But we had a month off.
We brought this up with both of these guys, Chris Paul and Mikhail Bridges, that, oh, they need to not play as many minutes. At some point, that's on Monty Williams. I don't care who the player is. You're the coach. If it's what's best for the team, you say, you're sitting now. Mm-hmm. And I get that that may upset you, but I'm doing what's best for this team. And even if it's Chris Paul, you have to do that to set your team up for success. And I don't care what it causes, what kind of friction it causes. At some point, that's why you're in that head coaching seat. You have to make the tough decisions that the player isn't willing to.
And I think there's two separate discussions as well. Listen, as a Suns fan, okay, or if you're a Lakers fan, if you're going to bring up LeBron, right, I think it's easy for me not giving a shit what happens to Lakers to marvel at what LeBron is doing at his age, mm-hmm. as opposed to, if I'm a Lakers fan right now, I'm like, cool, he's 30, whatever. We still missed the playoffs. I could give a shit less. Like, the marvel I kind of lose that. Like, Chris Paul, what he's doing at 37, it's fantastic. It's amazing. It really is. I'm not discrediting that. But at the end of the day, as a Suns fan, I just give a shit if we win the championship. So I could care less at how awesome it is that he's doing something that a 37-year-old point guard has never really done before. I want to see results on the court. So how do we get that to happen next year is my only thing that I really care about.
Which is fair, but like you got to, there's a big difference between LeBron's individual success and the fact that the Lakers are missing the play-in, not just the playoffs, but the play-in, and what Chris Paul is doing for a team that heading into the playoffs was the hands-down title favorite. Like those are very different things. And I get your point that in the playoffs, it didn't matter. Ultimately, they didn't accomplish their goal. But like that means that you shift focus onto the other younger guys that need room to grow, that need to expand their games, not we should dump this guy for Russell Westbrook.
I don't think anybody,
if I see that one more time, I'm gonna blow my own brains out.
John Wall?
I think when people talk about moving on for Chris Paul, and I could be wrong because I do see comments about the whole Westbrook thing. I promise you, if Russell Westbrook came to the Suns, we would all not be Suns fans next year. I promise you. We would be so mad about these games. Anyway, I think it's more moving on from his role is probably what people should be saying a little bit more is that he doesn't need to have as much of a hold on this team in terms of his contributions to it and really the reliability of his contributions to it, because you never know. Is he going to be hurt? Is he tired? Is he going to complain about his quad? Like it's just, they never seem to end in the playoffs for CP3. I mean, he's been here for 2 years and back to back years, he's had injuries. Like it just, you got to expect that. So you have to have, you know, some backups, some fail safes that you feel very confident in. And that's also where this all went wrong. You know, we're talking about Mikhail, but, and we're going to get into Cam tomorrow, but there's another Cam that absolutely crapped the bed this season. And that's part of this equation as well. And that's why you can't spell Chris Paul as much as you wanted to, because CP campaign was playing like doo-doo.
And that's why you had to go to Point Book, which turned out that backfired on you because he couldn't be the guy while also having to be the primary ball handler. The whole thing hinges on campaign and the bench too. The bench didn't do shit in this playoffs, and that they went from one of the deepest teams in the NBA to a kiddie pool. It was shallow as shit on that bench. Like, you had nobody to come in and spell these guys, which became problematic because then you had to expect your starters to carry everything. And it just couldn't happen, especially with Chris Paul's injury.
Well, Code in the chat said CP3 is not the problem. It's our young guys who keep relying on him to carry us. And I think, like you guys have been saying, that's kind of a big portion of this is even if Chris Paul wanted to take some time or just take a step back. Excuse me, even if he wanted to take a step back, play less minutes and hand over the reins to somebody else, who is he handing the reins over to at this point in time?
Well, I would argue, you know, for as much love as CP3 gets for being, you know, running the offense and orchestrating everything, you know, maybe at some point in the season, he could have taken a step back and said, okay, is this going to win us a championship? I know we're playing great right now, but a large part of this is because Book and I are carrying the load in the fourth quarter. Is this what's going to really win it for us? And then adjust as necessary. So you lose a couple more games. Okay. But if it's for the greater good, then maybe that's the way it needs to go.
I have a problem with that because I think now you plan for injuries, but you don't plan, especially when it's working as well as it's working. Because it wasn't like it was just Chris Paul and Book carrying the offense. Like they were the head of the attack for sure. But like, Mikhail Bridges and DA and Cam Johnson were the guys that really made you hurt as a defense. If you're focusing on those two guys, they were able to exploit those mismatches. They were able to take advantage of that throughout the regular season. Like just a few months ago, we were talking about how much DA grew after the trade deadline and stepped up for them, how consistent Mikhail Bridges was being on offense, you know, and before Cam Johnson got hurt, he was playing the best basketball of his career too. So it's one of those things where things definitely spiraled and they need to be better about that, about making sure that the offense is more balanced in a playoff setting. But I wouldn't put the onus on like Chris Paul and Devin Booker being like, wow, things are going too well, we should change it just in case I get hurt. Like nobody in the NBA operates that way.
Well, shit, it worked through the first two games of the Dallas series too. They were up 2-0
right
in that as well. I just think it may be too predictable at times that when you face the same team seven straight times, you know, it can get picked apart. And that's where Monty has to go back to the drawing board and go, how are we better prepared for this and figure out how to have it work regardless.
This is part of this, right? Like, and this is where my frustration lies and why I said before the show, Gerald, that I was like, I'm ready for this argument, because I think it's Mikhail is a snapshot at what I think is kind of a larger problem right now. And maybe we didn't want to own up to that problem last year because we got all the way to the finals and it was a fantastic year and nobody expected us to get that far. But this year our expectations were there and we didn't come close. We came two series short. And then you watch a team like the Warriors, and they're put in this exact same position, 2-0 on the road in Dallas, and two things happen. You have guys that developed through that program, Jordan Poole, who have stepped up their game immensely, right? And then you have somebody that a lot of people were kind of down on in Andrew Wiggins, who's been in that system for now the second year, and he had a game last night. And you're looking at the progression of them getting away from their two main superstars in Steph and Klay, even though Steph was still Steph, but Booker's still Booker. Mm-hmm. And Klay is still trying to find himself. He has great games. He has bad games, whatever. And they've been able to thrive and take it to another level against the same team that you just struggled with in seven games. So that, to me, was the snapshot of these two teams were equal at one point this year, and then our regular season just took off. And then all of a sudden, these guys came back and they found themselves and they all developed and they got into a nice groove. And here they are about to possibly sweep the same team that you took to seven games and then got housed in at home in the seventh game. So it's a little hard. It's a hard pill to swallow when you're watching the team that you thought you were going to match up with do better against the team that eliminated you.
I think you're oversimplifying it a bit, though, because the Warriors have experience. The Suns skipped steps. I think we tend to forget this. They still got to the finals, though. But they skipped steps. They didn't go through that heartbreak phase that most teams go through. They didn't go through the grind before they got the reward, which is what the NBA is known for, where even super teams have that disappointment at the beginning. I mean, you look at the Miami Heat back when they started their run. Like, even they had disappointments. The Suns skipped steps. They went from not in the playoffs to going to the finals. And sure, they experienced disappointment in the finals, but like they skipped all the steps to get there. I think part of this is the Warriors just have so much damn experience between their coaching staff, the players on the roster, that it carries them in a situation when they're up 2-0 and they understand how they have to go into Dallas and execute. Where I don't know that this Suns team, I think they bought into their own hype a little bit and didn't realize how important going in there and taking at least one of those two was. I mean, Monty multiple times in the series said, we weren't prepared for how desperate they were,
right?
Which screams to me inexperience more than anything.
And I think that's a good point, is because normally to be a championship caliber team, you have to experience one or two rough series that you learn from. They only had the one, really, the finals loss. And in that finals loss, a lot of it was just Giannis was a god. And there wasn't a lot you could do about that. But I do want to point out in that Warriors comparison that as much as, you know, the Wiggins, Mikhail Bridges thing kind of highlights the difference in the way that those two have been able to step up, like, we could also do the same for Jordan Poole versus Cam Johnson, and we could definitely do the same for DA versus Kevon Looney, because he's having a monster series by just doing the things that are in his role really well. Like, he's been a rebounding machine. He's always in the dunker spot for easy putbacks and cleanups and easy dunks around the rim. Like, he's having a great series just by doing, by maximizing his role. And that's something we've talked about with DA a lot. And I know a lot of people want to see him become the secondary option next year. But again, until he's able to create his own offense, it's hard to make a guy a primary or secondary option if you have to feed them the ball for them to be effective. And so that's why I look to what Kevon Looney's doing against this very same Mavs team and wondering why DA, a much more talented, individually talented player, couldn't do the same. And we can talk about how they didn't feed him or set him up for success. And I can see that to a certain extent. Like, the Warriors are moving the ball much better than the Suns did in that series. And that's part of what has made Looney so successful in this matchup. But, like, these are easy things. Like, these are effort things, crashing the offensive glass, being set up in the right spot.
It's accepting that you can do. Role.
Yes.
He accepts his role where DA wants more. And I think that sometimes can skew things too. Looney knows that's what I'm doing. These are right. The few things I'm taking care of.
Yeah.
And with the Wiggins thing, Wiggins was a number one scorer before. It's not like, oh, he found a way to be impactful in Golden State. He's a guy who understood if I want to accomplish more, I have to accept being a third or fourth option on a really good team rather than being the man like he was in Minnesota in particular. So this is a group that has accepted a lot of things where I don't think the Suns necessarily are there with the youth that they had as well.
I agree. Hey, listen, this is a Mikhail conversation, does not take the other dudes off the table either. Like, trust me. Believe me, when we talk about Cam tomorrow, same vibes. But what I will say is this, like, yeah, I get Kevon Looney is doing what he's doing with the Warriors against the Mavs. Cool. But offensively speaking, DA is a much better offensive player than Kevon Looney. He does not need to be in the dunker spot to score. And they still could not find a way to get him the ball to be able to score. That's also part on DeAndre. I'm not saying it's not. But, I feel like cool, but it's not the same thing.
It's not at all. And I'm not trying to compare DA skill set to Looney's or, imply that they're in the same class because one's a role player, one's a up and coming star.
Also, the Mavs are shooting like shit from three.
But, that definitely helps too.
They turned back into freaking pumpkins. Bullock and Bertans totally ghosting in this series. Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.
But I do think there is something to be said for DA wants to do so much and he could realize like you can do a lot and still have an impact on the game just by doing the little things that made him effective in the first place. And those little things weren't there in that series, especially as it wore on.
Is now a good time to use a Remember the Titans quote?
Sure, why not?
Attitude reflects leadership. No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to see Gerald put his head down.
I knew as soon as you said Remember the Titans. I knew as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, man.
I'm kidding.
All right, let's bring this back to Mikal and kind of put a bow on it with, I know Gerald had mentioned some of his thoughts on where Mikal needs to improve. What do you guys think?
Look, get in the weight room, like was said. I mean, that's the primary one. If he bulks up, that removes some of the issues that you saw. He'd be able to handle Luka trying to back him down because he has a little bit more bulk on him. And then obviously consistency offensively is another one. But I don't think, like I said, the onus should be as much on him to be the third scorer if they build this roster right.
I mean, if you've seen Scottie Pippen in 1986, I think, you'd be like, how big did he get? Because he got swole in about 10 years. So it's possible to gain – to gain some pounds and get bigger because Bridges definitely needs to do that. Like he needs to be more aggressive. He needs to be and you can't be as aggressive as you'd like unless you feel like you can take that impact.
Because you're not
on,
afraid of contact.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's why the greats have always gotten bigger is because they were getting abused and they needed to be able to absorb that contact. So I think that and then, Mikhail for the longest time has had a slight hitch in his shot. And I feel like, over the course of the offseason, maybe that's something he'll address and try to get that hitch worked out of his shot. There's no way to really work on consistency in a game except for just continuing to put in the work in the offseason and trying to feel more comfortable with your own game and your role. And I do feel like heading into next season, or at least I hope so, and it'd be best if Monty did, he makes it a point of emphasis of we need you to get to another level offensively and we cut back a little bit on the minutes and lighten that load. And you're always going to guard the best player on the other team if it's possible. Like that's just what Mikal Bridges is right now. But that doesn't mean that, we can't help you in our system. Because listen, it's not just one Warrior going at Luka, and Luka's still dropping his points, but they're making it very difficult for him. And they're throwing it in different waves, different guys. It's Clay.
Yes.
It's Wiggins. Also, you were talking about the soft switches. Mm-hmm. Like, watch Andrew Wiggins. He's not soft switching for shit. Mm-hmm. Like, he is fighting over those screens to get to guard Luka because he knows.
That's a system thing, though.
Exactly. I know. But that's something that, honestly, like, that's a fundamental that I feel like should transfer over from every single defense, you know? And, like, so that's something that's going to have to change. And I'm positive Monty will make that change.
Bees brings up a great point. Give Mikhail the girth regimen. I mean, this man knows how to bulk up.
He's yoked.
So. I will say, Mikhail, because we asked him near the beginning of last season about, you know, the weight room, and he said he had a pretty strict weight lifting regimen. It's hard for him to gain pounds, but he feels stronger. Like, he got stronger. It's just one of those things that it doesn't aesthetically show for him because he's a skinny dude. So I do think we should bear that in mind. It's not that he never hit the weight room or was like, I'm slender and graceful and I'll just always be this way. Like,
slender and graceful.
Like,
Mikhail,
he went in the weight room. He did.
Give me a call. I was 135 in college and I know how to put on weight. So we can talk.
It's bulking season for Mikhail.
But yeah, in terms of improvements for me, it's getting to the rim more because he is good at finishing when he gets there. It's getting to the free throw line more, cutting more. And this is more of a system thing, but getting him more looks from three because the Suns need to be a higher three-point shooting team. Yeah. Like, they shot a great percentage. They have the personnel for it. They need to, like, let loose from three-point range. They've got to tweak the system in that way because you're not going to win playoff games if your opponent's taking 10 or 15 more threes than you.
Don't worry. When Jay Crowder's gone next season, he'll have all the time at the top.
Three is worth more than two.
Yes, it is.
Simple math.
So.
Well, guys, with the summer heating up, we're going to be out doing things, gathering, having social functions, and we want to make sure everyone is safe and healthy. So a quick reminder that COVID-19 vaccines are free for everyone 5 and older. Those 12 and older are also now eligible for a booster. I promise you that COVID is not gone, and it is, in fact, kind of seemingly picking up currently.
Visit
azhealth.gov/findvaccine for a location near you. Get your vax, get boosted, whatever. Hot girl summer doesn't exist if you can't go
outside.
Why'd
you look at Gerald when you said that?
Well, it's just like the general thing.
Hot girl summer.
Don't like, be a prick. Get that stick.
It was more of a thing, right? You know? All right, it is Monday, so we are going to do a little bit of mailbag Monday, answer some questions.
Yay.
We got some of these from Twitter, at @PHNX_signs, as well as our members only Discord. So
let's be very clear. We're stealing this outright from Arizona PHNX Diamondbacks. This is the exact imagery they use. We're going to use their song. We're stealing Mailbag Monday.
Do we have to say we're stealing it if it's from our friends?
We
were inspired. Yeah.
I told Derek we're stealing it.
All right. First question from Tim.
The only kind of thuggery he has.
Tim from Phoenix asked, what is your favorite sports video game of all time?
Ooh, Coach K's College Basketball.
Okay.
It's NBA Jam, without a doubt.
Okay.
Yeah.
You say that, but you never play. You played like twice.
That's the most I've ever played video games is the NBA Jam. Like,
I mean, my answer would be NBA Jam, but for the sake of variety, I want to throw in NBA Street Volume 2 into the mix.
Which is an iteration of NBA Jam.
That does go hard.
And also Super Mario Strikers, because that game is fun as shit. It's so chaotic. I love it.
Mine was 2K12.
Lindsay going hard in the paint with like a straight up like 2K.
2K12 was so much fun. I don't know if it maybe was just I had the right people around me who were playing with me at the time, but that was like prime 2K for me.
I mean, Live 95 was pretty dope too.
You ever play that on computer keyboard? That thing's a bitch. Let me tell you that much. That was my first video game introduction was that. I also loved Slugfest. You ever play that one?
Mm-hmm.
It was basically was baseball, but NBA Jam style, where you could like hit insane home runs. It was basically the steroid era in baseball in a video game. It was
solid.
Fabio said, does racing games count as sports games? Because
Mario
Speed
Karts.
Underground 2 is classic.
Oh, I think so, yeah. For sure.
Underground was dope.
And if racing games, then Mario Kart is for sure up there.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Mario Kart's a blast. I like battle, though, a lot more than the racing.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Michael in the chat, Barkley, Shut Up and Jam. That's also a fun one.
I've never played that.
You haven't?
Me neither.
Oh, it's on the retro thing. We're going to play some.
Oh, nice.
Shut Up
and Jam.
Nice. Okay, next question. Jay Jones in downtown said, has your workplace seen incidents of choking increase lately?
I'm glad
they
brought
we had a I had a video about that last week.
I think that might be the point.
Yes. Mr. Jones, thank you. Yes, we've seen it as well. You're not alone.
Josh Hunt said, if you had to spend a week on vacation, who from PHNX are you taking with you and why?
Ooh, that's a good one.
This is a really hard one. I feel like it's easier to answer who I'm not taking with me.
Do it.
What, Edgy looks
Do
directly
it. Do
enough.
It. Yeah. Do it.
No, it's away. My idea of vacation. If you ask me to go hike, I'm not. Like, that's not vacation.
Bye, Kirsten.
So,
bye.
Like, we have some outdoorsy people here, and you are not invited on vacation if you ask me to wake up at 6 a.m. to go hike up a mountain. Nope. The answer is absolutely not.
So, on vacation, I like mindless, don't want to have to handle anything. I'm taking Jacob because he'll schedule everything out. He'll tell you where to be
that's
when you need
true.
To. Like, it'd basically be like traveling with my wife, who is very much like that. Spreadsheet oriented, tells you where to be.
That's kind of a good choice because I feel like I'm the one who's trying to like plan the things more often than not. And I would like to not have to do that.
All nice. I just heard is Espo married Jacob.
Yeah, that's all I heard too. Because I've been fortunate enough to travel with some of our colleagues, I think this is the easiest answer I could possibly come up with. And it would be Johnny Venerable.
Okay.
Johnny's just super chill. There's no drama with him on the road. Not that there was with you, Shane.
You traveled with me too. Yeah. So I was the drama.
Yeah, Johnny's just like a nice, easy guy. We were riding scooters around Indy. Like, he just likes to have fun, you know, and he was flying down the road because he weighs like 50 pounds. So it was cool.
Okay. I would probably say Shane. I feel like Shane and I would have fun.
Just be good answer.
Well, if I'm going for a rager, like, yeah, Shane's who I'm going. Like, if Shane, I want a good time.
I feel like Shane has too much energy for me.
No, Shane, you need to get, if you get Shane in the bar or in the, or like a hopping scene, he's perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's why we're taking him to Summer League with
But
us.
I'm old, man. Oh, yeah. Sometimes I just want to chill in the hotel room. So,
Espo, have you ever played craps?
Yes.
You want to play craps with me?
I'm in. The last time I was at Vegas Summer League, I played craps until 4 a.m.
I like how you're pronouncing every letter in that word.
Craps with me?
I love craps.
Whipped cream?
Whipped cream?
Sure.
All right, next question from Mega. Did your regular season play/roster really not translate to playoff basketball, as some outside critics are suggesting in retrospect?
I struggle with this because what got them there, their regular season play, was different from what we saw in the playoffs. Like, they didn't do what got them there. So I don't know. I would say no, just because they stopped running offense. They stopped doing what got them effective. And Chris Paul wasn't 100%. But I don't know. I don't think it's outlandish to say that they were not prepared for when things did change in the playoffs. I think that's fair to say.
I would say yes, because I think we're downplaying how much the Pelicans and Mavericks defense against this offensive system came into play and disrupted the system. I don't think it's that they just forgot how to play Suns basketball. I think it became difficult, and at that point, they abandoned certain things within their system. So I actually think, yes, it is. I agree with those people that are saying that.
This is just a feeling, but I felt like throughout the regular season, there was every time we had somewhat of a marquee game, there was always a key guy injured for the other team. And I felt like the Suns got through the regular season and they played a good schedule. But I just, since it didn't work in the playoffs, I'm going to say, yeah, it definitely did match up. So,
and
for whatever reason.
With that question, we should also bear in mind Booker missed most of the first series and Chris Paul was not 100% the last five games. Not an excuse, but like, it's harder to run your system when the two guys that are the head of that system are both hurt.
And we didn't make legitimate enough adjustments.
Yes.
Yeah.
The situations that we were given, whether it was injury or just the fact that we're playing the same team night in and night out, and they learn your thing.
Right. Well,
Chris actually made a point earlier, way earlier, when she said that Chris Paul said that if he was hurting the team, that he would sit out or do what's in the best interest. He said that last year. I would not say that he was a benefit to the team. Now, you didn't really have much of a backup option, so I'll give you that. But I mean, clearly
Campaign was playing well. I think he might have been okay with downgrading his minutes, but Campaign was absolutely terrible.
Unplayable in the second round.
So,
yeah.
All right, B. Duffy said, is anyone interested in a seven-footer who can anchor a defense, score at will, and rebound above average for the next 5 years?
Are we getting Joel Embiid or what?
I love that Bill Duffy, the agent for DeAndre Ayton, stepping into the mailbag here. It depends on the price, Bill. That's the answer to the question.
I'm good with, I think, 4 years. I don't think a five-year max is coming. I can tell you that. Just based on reading the tea leaves, I don't think we're going to see a five-year max for DA. But
really? You don't
4 years?
So.
I'd be perfectly fine with 4 years. The score at will part is making me laugh, though, because that's not who we're talking about here.
I go back to, it depends on who owns the team in July.
Also fair.
All right, last question. Miscellaneous Thoughts asked, who are your famous lookalikes? Gerald is Pete. Shane is a hoodie version Unabomber. But what about the rest of y'all?
Shane catching strays from the mailbag Monday.
Actually, no.
Bless your heart.
I haven't heard the hoodie version, but I've heard that before.
Really?
There's a comparison picture when I was in college, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't want it. The Count from Sesame Street.
Okay, that's kind of funny, though.
Holy shit.
Aside from Jonah Hill?
One. Jonah and I weight up and down, you know, yo-yoing.
Because there was a picture of you with your head on the Jonah Hill jersey.
No, that was actually me doing the pose.
Yeah. I don't really know. Maybe, I don't know. I would say something stupid, but I have no idea.
Something stupid.
Yeah. I've been asked that question before, and I never know. You never know who you look like.
Yeah.
It's always other people.
I mean, I'm looking at you right now, and you don't resemble anybody.
Look like Pete Davidson. I'm sorry, Chad, but Gerald doesn't look like him. I think we can still keep the joke going if you'd like to. I don't care.
I don't mind.
But realistically, you don't look anything like
you
him.
Don't mind being said you look like the guy that is one of the most popular bachelors in the world this year. All right, I see how that is. Yeah. I don't mind. Keep saying I look like that guy.
I haven't gotten any recently, but when I was younger, I used to get Brooke Shields a lot. But I think it was because when I was younger, really thin eyebrows were in, and I never went that route because I was always afraid. So I just left my eyebrows real thick. And I think that's
super
probably
bushy eyebrows.
Yeah.
I was going to say Michelle Monaghan.
I don't mind
said
that
you,
one.
In the chat said you look like Slim Uncle Phil.
I'll take that.
That's a good one.
I love Uncle Phil. Yeah. I'm down with that.
I never would have thought that, but now I'm seeing it. So
thank you for saying
it.
Slim. I appreciate that.
Thank you for clarifying.
Thank you. Because if you would have said Uncle Phil, I'm jumping out of the seven-story window right here.
We're not doing camera shows anymore.
I feel like we got to find a good one for Gerald because I can't. We were talking about this before the show. It's like, I can't think of anybody.
There was one that our friend Allie from Twitter keeps comparing me to. There's a show called Chuck, and it's like Chuck Berkowitz.
Oh, yeah,
or
a little
like
bit. Yeah, I guess so.
And then there was the other one from, what's that show? They're like out at sea. I can't remember what it's called. I don't watch shows like that. But like
they're out at sea.
There's another one that there's a character on that show. It's like a reality show.
Below deck.
There's a guy on there that apparently looks like me, but
Zachary Levy
from Chuck. I don't see you looking like Zachary Levy, Shazam, and Chuck, and
a little bit.
This is great for the audio listener.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Who now is like, oh yeah, in my mind, Gerald does look like Zachary Levy. What a great.
I mean,
deal.
We don't have a picture of him on the screen anyway, so it doesn't matter.
All right. So this is new. I have not been a participant in this yet, but apparently y'all started some ad read roulette.
Oh, yeah.
How does this work?
So we have a wheel that literally will spin and it'll show us which member of the show has to read the ad, and then a subsequent wheel that'll tell us what dialect or way we have to read said ad. And today is the Athletic Greens ad that we'll be doing in this. So we've moved on from Shane, and Emma's behind the Mac. So Emma, can you spin the initial wheel for us to see who has to do it today? All right.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, shit.
Yay! Yes!
It's me. All right, let's see what I have to do
this
with
is
ass.
So much more fun when you're not the person. All right, what
let's
are we doing?
See.
Oh boy, here we go.
What is that?
I can't
is that
read
Cookie
that.
Monster? Is that what it says?
Oh, God. All right. Cookie Monster. So